If you are listening to this right now, there is a pretty strong statistical probability that you are a direct biological descendant of the roughly 2.65 million people living in the American colonies in 1776.
Which is, you know, kind of mind-blowing when you think about it.
Right. And you might not even know it at all. I mean, we tend to think of the founding of the United States as this static textbook illustration, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You picture the signers of the Declaration, the troops in formation, maybe some guys in powdered wigs, just, you know, all frozen in this closed chapter of history.
But that is really just the narrative we're taught. We sort of box history up and leave it in the past.
Yeah.
But when you apply modern demographic modeling and genealogy to that era, that frozen illustration just shatters. You suddenly see this living, expanding biological network that is actually actively growing as we speak.
Which is exactly our mission for this deep dive. Today, we are tearing into a single, frankly staggering source text. It's called The 1776 Diaspora, Global Descendants of the 13 Colonies.
It is a massive piece of research.
It really is. And our goal here today is twofold. First, we are going to completely redefine your mental image of who actually built the foundation of the United States.
Right.
And second, we are mapping exactly where their bloodlines have traveled over the centuries and where those millions of descendants are, you know, walking around today.
Okay, let's unpack this. Where do we even anchor a data set that covers, what, 2.5 centuries of human reproduction?
Well, we really have to anchor it with the headline number of the entire study because it completely reorients your perspective on early America.
Okay, lay it on me.
According to this demographic model, there are over 212 million people alive today who trace their lineage directly back to the residents of the 13 colonies in 1776.
212 million people. I mean, that is an astronomical portion of the modern global population.
It's massive, and it all stems from a baseline population of just 2.65 million people who lived in that colonial territory at the time of the Revolution.
But, you know, to understand the leap from roughly 2 million to over 200 million, we first have to establish how this model actually defines a descendant.
Right. What are the rules here?
So the researchers use a very strict binary criterion.
So it operates like a switch, like you either have the lineage or you don't.
That is the exact core of the methodology. If you have a single solitary ancestor in your entire family tree who was alive and residing in the territory of the 13 colonies in 1776, you are part of this diaspora.
Just one.
Just one. The model does not care about your racial background, your current nationality, or whether your other 1,000 ancestors arrived last Tuesday.
Right.
One colonial ancestor flips that binary switch to yes, and you're officially counted in that 212 million.
Which means we really need to take a hard look at who those initial 2.65 million people actually were. Because, I mean, the monolithic image of early America and the English colonists, the Puritan towns, the blacksmith, it's so deeply ingrained in our culture.
Well, absolutely.
Like, if I'm trying to picture who birthed this massive modern diaspora, my mind automatically goes to a very homogenous, very English group of people.
Right. But the demographic data from 1776 completely dismantles that myth of a homogenous founding population. Well, it's just not true. Let's break down the actual 2.65 million baseline pool.
Okay.
So the majority, about 75.5%, were indeed categorized as white or, you know, of European descent. But the English population was actually a minority within that overall group.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Only 41.5% of the total colonial population was English.
Wait, less than half of the entire population living in the original 13 colonies were actually English.
Far less than half. The rest of that European descended population was this incredibly complex mosaic. You had the Scots-Irish making up nearly 7% of the total population, Germans at 6%, and Scottish at 5.3%.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then you layer in the Dutch dominating the Hudson Valley, the Welsh, the non-Ulster Irish, French Huguenots who were, you know, fleeing religious persecution,
right,
plus Swedish and Finnish settlements, alongside established Sephardic and Ashkenazi Jewish populations in the major port cities.
That drastically changes the picture. It wasn't a monolith at all. It was already a massive, bubbling melting pot of European refugees, opportunists, and immigrants.
Exactly. And we're only talking about the European side of the ledger there. The source data shows that Black residents, both enslaved and free, made up almost 19% of the total 1776 population.
That's nearly one in five people.
Roughly 450,000 enslaved individuals of African descent and about 50,000 free black residents.
Incredible.
Furthermore, the model factors in the indigenous nations living within the claimed boundaries of the colonies at that time, that adds another 5.7% to the baseline.
Okay, so how many people is that?
That represents about 150,000 people across 15 different nations, including the Cherokee, the Iroquois Confederacy, and the Missogee Creek.
Now, I'm looking at this demographic breakdown, and there is one thing that stands out to me as highly improbable.
Oh, what's that?
There are strictly zero Asian residents listed anywhere in the 1776 data. I mean, I find it hard to believe that on an entire continent heavily engaged in global maritime trade, there wasn't a single person of Asian descent.
Yeah, the zero Asian population figure really highlights the rigid documentation rules required for this kind of historical modeling.
How so?
Well, the source is very clear. There are zero individually attested Asian residents in the 13 colonies known to historians in 1776.
Meaning they might have been, you know, walking the streets of Boston, but unless a census taker or a ship's captain wrote their name down, they just don't exist in the math.
Precisely. Documentation is the lifeblood of demographic modeling. There were likely itinerant Filipino seamen or South Asian mariners passing through port cities.
Right, that makes sense.
But the model requires documented residents to anchor a lineage. Interestingly, the earliest documented Asian community in what would become the U.S. was a Filipino settlement called the Manilaman.
Oh, really? Where was that?
It was in Spanish Louisiana. But because they were outside the official borders of the 13 colonies in 1776, they cannot be added to this specific ancestor pool.
That strictness actually makes the resulting 212 million figure much more impressive, I think, because it isn't based on vague guesses.
Not at all.
And the source doesn't just give us percentages either. It highlights specific individuals whose bloodlines are flowing through this diaspora today. I mean, these aren't just statistics.
No, they're real people.
Right. You look at Paul Revere, everyone knows the Midnight Ride, but his father wasn't an English colonial.
No, he wasn't.
He was a French Huguenot refugee named Apollos Revoir, who anglicized his name to fit in.
Or look at the Jewish population sustaining the war effort.
Yeah.
You have Haim Salomon, an Ashkenazi Jewish immigrant from Poland.
Yeah, his story is wild.
He was a broker who basically stepped in and gave interest-free loans to James Madison just to keep the Continental Congress afloat.
It is profound to think that the American Revolution was literally bankrolled by a Polish Jewish immigrant, and his descendants are now woven into this massive global network.
Julie.
And the lineages surviving from the black colonial population represent incredible resilience. Mm-hmm. Take James Armistead Lafayette, an enslaved man who volunteered as a spy.
Right.
The intelligence he provided to the French and American forces proved absolutely decisive at the Battle of Yorktown.
You also have Phyllis Wheatley, a woman who survived being kidnapped from West Africa and enslaved in Boston. She became the first published African-American woman poet and actually even met with George Washington in 1776.
And indigenous figures whose lineages are compounding today, too, like Nanyehi or Nancy Ward. She was a Cherokee beloved woman who held a vote in her tribal council.
Yeah, the human element is just fascinating.
When you pause to digest these stories, it is staggering. We were talking about French silversmiths, Polish brokers, enslaved spies, and Cherokee diplomats.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing who they were brings up the most pressing mechanical question. How do their specific bloodlines physically multiply? Like, how do we mathematically get from a pool of 2.65 million diverse individuals in 1776 to 212 million people today?
Well, that requires demystifying the demographic engine of the model. The researchers identified specific variables that drive population growth over centuries.
So if they have these variables, are human family trees basically just a biological version of compound interest, like putting a dollar in a high-yield bank account and letting it sit there, accumulating and multiplying for 250 years.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it, honestly.
Oh, thanks.
Because human reproduction over multiple centuries operates almost exactly like compounding interest. And the primary driver in this biological bank account is what the researchers call the per-generation multiplier.
Okay.
For this baseline model, that multiplier is set at 1.55.
Let's break down that 1.55. Does that mean every person had 1.5 kids?
It measures surviving descendants per parent per 25-year generation. So if the number was 1.0, a population would simply replace itself without growing. Setting the multiplier at 1.55 accounts for the historical reality of the last 2.5 centuries.
So balancing things out.
Exactly, balancing out the eras of high birth rates with the tragedies of high infant mortality. It acts as the compounding engine.
And as that engine runs over 250 years, the lineages interlock, which leads to one of the most incredible statistics in this entire deep dive.
The Black American metric.
Yes. The researchers highlight a specific metric they call the Black American enslaved descent fraction, and it sits at 0.93.
Yeah, based on a synthesis of ancestry literature and demographic research, a massive 93% of living Black Americans today are descendants of the colonial era.
93%. That means if you are a Black American listening to this right now, the statistical probability that you carry the lineage of that 1776 population is near absolute.
It really is. Due to the binary criterion of the model, Black Americans actually have the highest documented inclusion rate in the entire 1776 diaspora.
It's amazing.
It's a profound testament to the resilience of those lineages. I mean, surviving centuries of systemic trauma, the Middle Passage, and chattel slavery, to now form one of the most deeply anchored groups in this entire global network.
So rather than just making one giant mathematical guess based on a 1.55 multiplier, how did the researchers actually run this simulation to be sure that 212 million is the right number?
Well, what's fascinating here is how they stress tested their own math.
Oh, they didn't just run it once.
No, they didn't rely on a single calculation at all. They utilized a 400-sample Monte Carlo simulation.
Okay, for those of us who aren't statisticians, how does that simulation work in practice?
Sure. A Monte Carlo simulation essentially creates hundreds of alternate statistical timelines. So the researchers ran the demographic math 400 separate times.
Wow, 400 times.
Yeah. And in each run, they slightly altered the variables, like maybe tweaking the birth rates down for a specific generation or increasing the mortality rate to reflect a war or a disease outbreak.
All within reason, though.
Right. All within scientifically plausible ranges. And by looking at the spread of outcomes across all 400 of those timelines, they constructed a 90% confidence band.
So they built a bracket of probability rather than just pointing at one single number.
Exactly. The simulation proves with 90% confidence that the true global descendant population sits somewhere between 209 million and 227 million people.
Oh, I see.
The 212 million figure we've been using is simply the median point estimate.
The compounding math is undeniably solid then. But here is the piece of the puzzle that really dens the mind.
The global spread.
Yes. The model estimates that about 201 million of those descendants live inside the United States today. That leaves roughly 11.3 million descendants living outside the U.S. borders.
It is a huge number of expats.
It's wild that a lineage can travel so far in just a couple of centuries.
Yeah.
If I had to logically guess where those expats ended up, especially right after the revolution, I'd assume they fled back to the safety of the United Kingdom, right? Back to the crown.
That assumption makes sense, but it totally falls apart when you look at the raw tracking data.
Really?
Yeah. The United Kingdom only contains about 943,000 descendants today.
Not even a million people. So where did the vast majority of that 11.3 million go?
They went north. The vast majority of descendants living outside the U.S. are in Canada.
Canada.
Yeah, totaling roughly 6.7 million people.
Over 6 million Canadians are part of the 1776 diaspora.
Yes. And the model explains this by distinguishing between two types of migration. First, you have voluntary immigrant flows, people moving across borders for jobs, marriages, or land over the last 2 centuries.
Sure.
But Canada's massive number is primarily driven by the loyalist cohorts of 1783.
The colonists who picked the losing side of the American Revolution and had to leave.
Exactly. When the war ended, massive waves of loyalists fled the newly formed United States. They crossed the border into Canada, taking their colonial lineages right with them.
And then the compound interest kicked in.
Precisely. Those bloodlines have been experiencing that compound interest multiplier in Canadian territory for the last 250 years.
That perfectly explains Canada. But are there any other geographical anomalies where these bloodlines compounded in isolation like that?
Yes, actually. The Bahamas represents an incredible demographic bottleneck.
The Bahamas?
Yeah, the Loyalists didn't just flee to Canada. Many took ships down to the Caribbean. And because the overall population of the Bahamas has historically remained relatively small, the compound compounding effect of those 1776 bloodlines is incredibly concentrated.
How concentrated?
Today, an astonishing 994 out of every 1,000 residents in the Bahamas possess 1776 ancestry.
Wait, 994 out of 1,000. That is essentially universal. That's over 99% of the country.
It is a near total saturation of the population. And, you know, you see other massive nodes globally, too.
Right.
Mexico has nearly 1.2 million descendants due to border porosity and migration over time.
Okay, that makes sense geographically.
And Liberia in West Africa has over 382,000 descendants.
Right, from the colonization movements.
Exactly. That traces back to the 19th century colonization movements when free and formerly enslaved Black Americans emigrated there. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this global map proves that human biological networks cannot be contained by lines drawn on a map. Lineages bleed through borders constantly.
You could be a citizen of the Bahamas or, you know, a resident of Toronto, and you have just as much biological claim to the 1776 diaspora as someone living in downtown Philadelphia.
Yep, the math doesn't lie.
But what happens if a bloodline stays put? Does the data show what happens to the populations that never left the original colonies? Let's bring this back to the modern-day United States, because the state-by-state breakdown reveals something entirely unexpected. Here's where it gets really interesting.
It does. The domestic distribution is highly volatile. If you look at the percentage of a state's current population that possesses 1776 ancestry, the state with the highest concentration by a massive margin is West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Yes. 83% of the population of West Virginia has at least one ancestor from the colonial era.
Mm.
Wow. And which states sit at the bottom of that list?
Hawaii has the lowest concentration at 32.6%, and California sits right near the bottom at just 35.1%.
It's almost like certain states act as demographic time capsules. Like, West Virginia has just been stewing its original lineages for 2.5 centuries without much disruption, whereas California has this constant, rapid churn of new arrivals.
A demographic time capsule is exactly what the data reveals, and this leads us to the source material's most provocative hypothesis.
Okay, let's hear it.
The researchers ran a correlation between a state's percentage of 1776 ancestry and its contemporary economic health, specifically looking at the 2023 median household income.
So comparing colonial bloodlines to modern bank accounts, what is the correlation?
It is a strong negative correlation, mathematically represented as R equals 0.428. This is referred to in the data as the PDC hypothesis, which stands for past descendant concentration.
Let me make sure I'm digesting this correctly. A negative correlation means that as one metric goes up, the other goes down. So the higher a state's concentration, the 1776 past descendant concentration, the lower that state's modern median household income.
That is what the data demonstrates. Now, it is absolutely crucial to remain strictly impartial here and explain the mechanics behind this hypothesis.
Yeah.
The researchers are absolutely not suggesting that colonial DNA inherently causes economic depression.
Obviously not. I mean, there is no biological poverty gene passed down from a French silversmith or a Dutch farmer.
Exactly. Furthermore, the researchers explicitly stress-tested this to rule out what they term the black share confounder.
What does that mean?
They reran the economic correlation while entirely dropping states with historically large black populations from the data set.
And what happened?
The negative correlation still held firm. This means the wealth disparity is not merely a reflection of the historical disenfranchisement of black communities.
Okay, so if the negative correlation isn't driven by race, and it obviously isn't driven by some colonial DNA flaw, why are the old stock states poorer?
Well, the past descendant concentration hypothesis argues that high 1776 ancestry actually serves as a proxy for a lack of recent in-migration.
Oh, I see.
Think about the mechanics of modern economic growth. Thriving, dynamic state economies naturally attract massive waves of global immigrants, right? People moving across the world for tech sectors, modern manufacturing, or major universities.
And when those millions of new immigrants arrive in a booming state, they basically dilute the overall percentage of people who have 1776 ancestry.
You hit the nail on the head. In California, a booming economy has drawn millions of new residents from Latin America, Asia, and globally. Because those new arrivals do not possess 1776 ancestry, California's total concentration of colonial descendants drops down to 35%.
Right.
Conversely, a state like West Virginia, which has not attracted large waves of new global immigrants in recent decades, retains a highly concentrated 83% of old stock ancestry.
So the old lineages aren't causing the lower income at all. The high concentration of colonial ancestry is just a symptom of an economy that isn't actively pulling in new global talent.
Precisely.
The history in our veins is acting as a literal proxy for modern economic dynamics.
It proves that our biological history and our current socioeconomic reality are entirely tethered together.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive talking about history as a static painting locked away in a museum. But instead, we have mapped a massive living biological web of 212 million people.
Yeah, a web that is everywhere.
Right. A web that dictates the demographic makeup of Canada, saturates the islands of the Bahamas, and serves as an economic barometer for the modern United States.
It shows us that the past is never actually past. It is walking around in the present, influencing the modern world every single day.
And it connects right back to you, the listener, because whether you trace your roots to a French Huguenot silversmith, an enslaved poet who met George Washington, a Cherokee diplomat, or perhaps you were a recent immigrant who arrived a few years ago and has since married into this diaspora. History is not just a textbook.
No, it's alive.
It is a living, breathing lineage, and it is entirely intertwined with the reality you navigate today.
And this raises an important question, one that is really worth exploring long after this deep dive ends.
What's that?
Because this diaspora utilizes that strict binary criterion, meaning you only need one single colonial ancestor in your entire family tree to be fully included in this massive network.
Right, just one.
How many generations will it take before the mathematical compounding absorbs every single one of us?
Oh, wow.
How long before the cultural concepts of old stock and recent immigrant completely dissolve, leaving us with a single, indistinguishable global family tree?
That is a fascinating thought. It makes you look differently at literally everyone you pass on the street. It turns out that static painting of 1776 isn't locked in a museum at all. We are painting it right now.